Welcome to St. James Bible Bites. This podcast was recorded live at our Sunday morning service. We continue our sermon series on the book of Genesis and continue the story of Joseph. The reading is taken from Genesis 37, verses 12 to 33. The talk is given by the Reverend David Ager, our guest speaker, and is entitled Joseph, Betrayed by Brothers. You can watch the whole service on our YouTube channel, which is linked on our website.
So this is how Genesis explains the story that Rachel shared so lovely with us earlier on. Thank you. Never popped behind a palm tree before, so here goes. I would just like to say it's not just brothers that fall out, does it? I've got two sisters and I can remember some of the things we did to each other. So many of you who will have sisters will also remember. Anyway, this is the story in Genesis. So I'm reading from Genesis 37, verses 12 to 33. Joseph sold by his brothers. Now, his brothers had gone to graze their father's flock near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing their flock near Shechem. Come, I'm going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring back word to me." Then he sent him off from the vale of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering about in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks?" "They've moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes the dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of those cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. "Let's not take his life," he said. "Don't shed any blood. Throw him into this cistern here in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him." Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the ornate robe he was wearing, and they took him and they threw him into the cistern. The cistern was empty. There was no water in it. As they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balms, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay a hand on him. After all, he is our brother in our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So when the Midianite merchants came by, the brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. When Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" Then they got Joseph's robes, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe into the blood. They took the ornate robe back to their father and said, "We found this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Well, the last time it was my turn to speak to you here at St. James, I was asked to speak about brothers who didn't get on. it all turned very nasty and ended up in extreme violence. Well, guess what? Sense of déjà vu. But this time we're in the story of Joseph, a story that Mike opened up for us last week, and we've had a very helpful recap this morning as we listened to the desert area down here. We met both Joseph and his family and learned some of their background. It was not all pretty. I say, who needs TV and radio soap operas when you have the book of Genesis? It's all there. One of the features of Joseph's story so far is that of having favorites within a family. But it's not just in families, is it, that we encounter people who seem to choose favorites? And it's something that can really get under our skin, can't it? At school, at work, in our social settings, the one who always gets chosen. The one you know is going to get that promotion, so it's hardly worth putting in your own application. And over time, that sort of thing can destroy esteem and sap our motivation. What's the point in trying hard if that one is always going to be the prominent one? Mind you, that kind of attitude doesn't seem to have afflicted Joseph. His dreams have taken root in him, so much so that even his father had to warn him not to get above himself. So let's pick up the story and take it further on today. Joseph is home alone, as his brothers are off finding pasture for the family sheep. Not quite sure why Joseph has stayed behind, because on a previous occasion, if we look back to verse 2, we'll see that he has been out with them. It wasn't that he was too young to do it, or too inexperienced, or something like that. Don't know why he stayed behind. Perhaps his father Jacob sensed that there could be trouble if Joseph went off with them. After all, he had form in that department. But Jacob still thinks it's okay to send him off to see how they're getting on, to check up on them. I wonder if Jacob didn't quite trust the brothers. It was quite a long way for Joseph to go. He started off in Hebron, see here, bottom right, and it was about 40 miles or so from Hebron to Shechem, where the brothers had said, "We're going to find pasture for our sheep." But then, of course, when he got there, he found that they'd moved on somewhere else, managed to find out where. They're going to Dothan, somebody said, they had announced. And that was about another 15 miles. So in all, he probably goes the equivalent of from here to, say, Bristol. Not bad on foot. Well, his brothers spot him coming. Maybe it was the uniform that gave him away. Mike made the point last week that probably this coat was not one that he wore all the time, but he was obviously wearing it today. Perhaps he thought that his mission on behalf of his father to go and see how things were doing in the family firm was something that warranted dressing up. He may or he may not have known what reception he was going to get. The reception he got was, here comes that dreamer. In actual fact, the Hebrew suggests that they might have been a bit ruder than that and said, here comes that super dreamer. Nicknames. Nicknames can be belittling, can't they? If you followed the television sitcom Yes, Minister, which seems to get repeated quite often, mind you, it's pretty good, you may remember how uncomfortable Sir Humphrey Appleby was when it got out that his nickname at his school had been Humpy. And Jim Hacker got hold of this and teased him with it. He was not happy being known as Humpy in the corridors of power was not quite his vision of success. Nicknames sometimes can be quite endearing. They can simply be something that highlights one of our characteristics. We can see the joke and we can go along with it. But often, nicknames can be hurtful, especially when they come, as in Joseph's case, from those closest to us. Joseph's brothers thought that they could shut him up and put an end to the threat of his dream being fulfilled while they were away from home and out of their father's eye. But then Reuben steps in with a plan of his own. I wonder if Reuben was trying to make up for past mistakes. He had stepped out of line seriously against the pattern that God had given and against the family code of the time. And Jacob was not pleased, so much so that he took away from Reuben the right of being the firstborn and passed it to his younger brother, Judah. So perhaps Reuben felt that he could find favor by defending Joseph. But then Reuben seems to go off on his own. We won't ask why. Because he doesn't witness what happens immediately after. Joseph ends up in the pit without his robe, perhaps having then lost just a little bit of his identity. And the others sit down to stuff their faces, just to rub it in, perhaps. This meat's good. Hear that, Joseph? This meat's good. And it's Judah's turn to have a bright idea. Why kill Joseph when they could actually make some money out of him? Money is so very attractive, isn't it? A passing caravan of traders from the north on their way to Egypt provides the opportunity. The deal was done, and off the traders went with Joseph in tow. Neither the brothers nor Joseph have a clue what comes next. But he's out of their hair. It's then that Reuben returns to the scene and realizes that his plan is completely shot apart. So there they are, with Joseph's robe, but not Joseph. They decide to soak it in some goat's blood and take it home to show their father. When they do that, they cannot even bring themselves to speak of Joseph by name. Jacob, of course, is distraught and is there left with an imagined story of Joseph having been savaged to death by a wild animal, and all the recriminations. Why did I let him go? Why didn't I keep him at home? If only. So what a mess. What a complete and utter mess. And it's time here to pause the story. Is there anything positive we can take away with us? I believe so. God makes promises. Mike made the point last week that in the culture of the day, dreams were considered as messages from God. Promises of what he would one day do. And Joseph seems to have held on to these. Though he didn't always handle that belief as tactfully as he might. And our God is a promise maker. We're not far into the story of the Bible, indeed in the first chapter, when already he promises that in the creation order, everyone, everything will be fed with all that they need. When Noah is taken into the ark, God promises that he will be safe, and afterwards sets his bow in the clouds as a promise that never again will he destroy the earth in that way. We've seen promises in the call of Abraham, huge promises that stretch not only through Abraham's lifetime, but throughout the rest of history. And we too, here today, live in the light and warmth of a promising God. Peter, when he writes in the New Testament to his readers, says that they can live as those called and blessed by God through what he describes as God's very great and precious promises. Sometime this week, flick through the Gospels, the life of Jesus. How many promises can we find there? God makes promises. And more than that, God always keeps his promises, whatever. Joseph might have thought that everything was falling apart. We do not read that he thought so, but it would only be natural, wouldn't it? And he wouldn't have been alone. So many in the history of the scriptures, Abraham, Moses, Elijah, John the Baptist, all came to a point when they thought they had got it all wrong, that they hadn't heard God at all, or that they had heard the wrong thing. The gifted and widely used evangelist David Watson, for many years vicar of a church in York in the shadow of the Minster, speaker at many conventions and university missions, when he was seemingly at the height of his ministry, began to be ill with cancer and died aged just 50. In his book, Fear No Evil, he recounts that final challenging journey and confesses that he was assailed with enormous doubt, threatening to undermine his whole faith. And he writes, "The worst times for me were at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I had preached the gospel all over the world with ringing conviction. I had told countless thousands of people that I was not afraid of death, since through Christ I had already received God's gift of eternal life. For years I had not doubted these truths at all. But now the most fundamental questions were nagging away insistently, especially in those long hours of the night. If I was soon on my way to heaven, how real was heaven? Was it anything more than a beautiful idea? What honestly would happen when I died? Did God himself really exist after all? How could I be sure? Indeed, how could I be sure of anything apart from cancer and death? I literally sweated over those questions. Never before had my faith been so ferociously attacked." So for Joseph, while it looks hopeless, nothing changes what God has said. Reuben's plan buys enough time for the traders to come along and send the brothers off on another tack. That means Joseph's life will be spared, because God is going to keep his word, but just in his way. How many of us are carrying questions as we go through our lives? Why did this or that happen or not happen? We find ourselves with the writer of Psalm 77 in desperation, crying to God about our situation. Has the Lord's unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? But he then goes on to remember those things in which God has unmistakably acted and his hope is restored. The circumstances remain, but so does God. And because of who God is, he is sustained in his trust. And we come to this table this morning for exactly the same reason. But lastly, the third positive thing we can take away: there is no stage at which God abandons us. Sometimes we describe a situation as, it's the pits. Well, for Joseph, of course, that was literally true. He had nothing to drink and nothing to eat. He hurt all over and he was probably frightened. It all seemed out of control. But God had not abandoned him. His brothers want him out of the way, but God does not, as we shall see. What is your pit, I wonder? Anything from that nagging feeling that we might have got this faith thing all wrong, to the utter desolation of feeling completely alone. If ever we're with someone in the pitch black, what is it we say? Are you still there? In our pitch black, we can know the confidence that God is still there, hard though the darkness may be. Psalm 139, My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. All the days ordained for me were written in your book. When I awake, I am still with you. Let's learn this from Joseph and be ready to go on with his story.
For more Bible Bite podcasts, simply visit our website www.stjamestaunton.co.uk and click on resources. Thank you for listening, and may God be with you today.